Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing. Three ball. Perfect. Garland went to the lane. Locked the Mobley. Pow. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast is brought to you by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. The wait is finally over. Media day is here. Picture day, basically, around the NBA. Training camps have opened up and are off-season nightmare is finally over.
It's about time, Justin.
There's real things to talk about instead of us just gas bagging. That voice you heard was my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing?
Well, let's never rule out some good old-fashioned gas bagging. Regular season hasn't started yet, fellas.
Yeah, that's a good point. We are going to continue to do so, but I'm really excited today, Carter, because we are welcoming back two friends of the program. The fellas from Wine and Gold Radio. First of all, Rafa Hernandez Brito. Rafa, how are you doing today?
How's everything going? How do you say hello in Canadian? How are Howdy. You, Carter? How are you, John?
Everything Pleasure functions to be as here. A hello. Hey, right off with the Canadian. Good,
nice to be here, eh?
Yes, exactly. You see, you've already got it figured out. I feel right at home, and that's what I appreciate about you, Rafa. You're always bringing people the Cavs and that welcome in their native language, and I appreciate that. Also joining us is Joe Gabriel. Joe, how are you doing today?
Hola. That's what I meant. I'm doing well, there we guys. Go. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on. I'm sorry that we're sitting so close. We had some technical difficulties.
Oh, I like it. I think it's actually really sweet. I think it fulfills...
Chum up for the whole show?
Well, there's a little bit of wish fulfillment there for me because, you know, I never get to throw my arm around Justin's shoulder.
It's true. That's why we're so tight.
It kind of reminds me of the two
like
Muppets.
Split screen.
It reminds me of the two Muppets out up there in the balcony.
The Statler and Waldorf.
The old crabby Muppet.
Yeah. That can be your role for this podcast. But we got a great show for you guys today. People might not realize this, but Carter not only is a fantastic podcaster, but he produces everything that you see on the screen today. And he's put together a little bit of a production. He's put together some quotes from Media Day. And I'm going to take a little bit of a backseat as he steers us through Media Day. And the rest of us just kind of give some takes. So, Carter, the wheel is yours.
Absolutely. Fellas, I wanted to kind of dive through five quotes, five sections, five moments from Media Day, and then kind of pull a topic out of each one, a discussion topic, if you will. I think we're going to start with the coach, with JB and Kobe's media availability. And let's take a listen to what he had to say about expectations going into the year.
How will you approach your first season with lofty expectations?
It's about embracing who you are. So those expectations don't bring any added pressure. You know, we have a talented group of players in that locker room, that support each other, that are there for one another and want to compete with one another. So that's what our focus is on. If we do the right things, good things will happen for this group. And, you know, we believe that if we play with the same spirit we played with last year, we defend the way we defended last year, you know, positive things are going to happen for us. And we focus on that.
So, you know, I think that this was an interesting thing to just kind of jump off the bat with, which was, you know, talking about expectations, but also talking about vibes. You know, Justin, you talked about this at the beginning of saying that in a sea of bad vibes media days, Cavs had some good vibes. What do you think, buddy?
Yeah, it's funny because normally media day is kind of, you know, just everyone's excited to be there again. You know, you've had some time off. Maybe the people that were weighing on you a little bit by the end of the year, you're happy to see them once again. But it's nice to see that the Cavs are still kind of having this mentality, because I know they added a lot of talent this offseason, from Donovan Mitchell to bringing back Ricky Rubio, Robin Lopez, Raul Neto. Like, that's all great, but the league is still stacked. They're still going to face a lot of competition, and this isn't a team that's just going to be able to coast to victories. Rafa, what do you think the expectation should be for the Cavs, and do you agree with what JB had to say?
I definitely totally agree with what he has to say, and what I take from, you know, you talk about vibes and media day, this is the first year, this is my ninth season going into doing the Cavs in Espanol, and this is the first time I didn't see much of, like, the one year we had the what's the name of the painter that used to paint beautiful trees and happy little trees?
Oh, Bob Ross.
Bob Ross wig, and everybody's like pretending they're doing that. Mm-hmm. JD with a disco wig. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that this media day was serious, because you still see the young vibe, but it was business. And that's what I liked out of what I saw, and what I saw in practice this morning, the first one of training camp. It is a business. It is a mindset that they have. Call it a chip on the shoulder from what happened and how we ended last season. Call it expectations, whatever you want to call it. I don't think the Cavs would slide down on their defensive efforts from last season. I don't think that's going to change. I think it's going to get better. And when it comes to expectations, I think JB has done a great job keeping a steady hand in asking every single player to be the best version of who they are. Nobody's doing anything they cannot do, and nobody's being asked to do something that they are not able to do. They just want everybody to be the best version of Dean Wade, the best version of Lamar, the best version of everybody. And I think that's what worked last year, and why change it, right?
I think that says something about the maturity of the team. You know, I think pleasant surprise last year. Trade for a star player. You would think it would be all, you know, silly fun, happy vibes. And, you know, Joe, what kind of vibe did you get kind of seeing this team starting their, you know, their proper seasoned work? Do you feel like that they do have that kind of earned maturity?
I do. And Rafa brought up a good point, because I was thinking about, I wonder if Jetty's going to break out the disco wig. No. He does like bringing out the shades and the mustache and all that stuff. But I thought, you know, this year it was organic. They do like each other. They do enjoy each other. They do have fun. So they don't need to do anything crazy. You know what I mean? They really enjoy each other. And as far as so I thought it was a fun vibe, but a serious vibe, you know what I mean? Like a business vibe.
That's what I've got.
I got like more business this year.
Business really jumped out at me, you know, like, I think that's a vibe you're probably only going to get in the room, you know, like, cause obviously, you know, we're only seeing the press conferences and those have a certain business vibe as is, but no, that's super, super exciting. And, you know, Joe, I think same question to you, you know, what should the team's expectations be?
Well, that's a good question, because I think, and that's been the big kind of topic, you know what, they should have somewhat high expectations. I mean, why not? You know, you look at the Guardians right now, and they had no expectations, and look where they've gone. And I think, and I'm not saying the Cavs should think about the championship, but why not think about getting 4 or 3 or 2? You know what? They should worry about their expectations every night. Mm-hmm. Expect to win tonight, and play the season. Play the season out and see where it lands them. They're a good team. They shouldn't worry about it.
I think the way JB puts it to the guys is very good and very clear. And it's like, we can all sit here and say, we think they should go straight into the playoff. you know, 5, 6, 4, 4 would be great because you're having a home court advantage in the first round and whatever you want to call it, right? Mm-hmm. You want to avoid the playing tournament. But the way JB said it to us when we talked to him yesterday was, listen, we're going on everybody doing their job. Mm-hmm. And everything else will take care of itself. Mm-hmm. They don't want to deal with enough. I think they already have enough expectation of each other, of themselves, that to start thinking about championship or boss, like somebody mentioned, or you know, you have to qualify at this level. We learned last season also that there are so many things that we don't control. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that usually come and kick you in the butt.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what stands out to me is when you mentioned how JB is still pushing them to be the best versions of themselves. This isn't a team like Miami or Milwaukee where the core players are already in the prime of their careers, their finished products, and it's, you know, we're going to work on some stuff throughout the regular season, but we understand that this is a mm-hmm. marathon, not a sprint. We have to preserve our bodies. It's different for the Cavs where you still have a lot of young guys. Like, even though Darius arrived in a lot of ways last year, he's still a ways away from his prime. That's going to take a lot of work. That's going to take refining his game. Same goes for Evan, Jared, even Donovan. Like, he's starting to get into that age where a guard gets into their prime in the NBA. So there's still a lot to prove. And I think an important thing to remember, and I know I've said this before on the podcast, but these regular season standings aren't determined by a bunch of people sitting down over glasses of whiskey and discussing the merits of each roster, right? Like, well, you know, this team's a little bit weaker at small forward, so we'll give them the 4 seed instead of 1, 2, or 3. No, we see teams overachieve all the time. Even when LeBron was here and we made the finals 4 years in a row, we were only the 1 seed, what, once or twice maybe over that stretch? Yeah. So we've seen these teams come out and overachieve in the regular season before, and I think that should be the expectation. The expectation should be, let's go out, let's earn a home court playoff series, because that's going to give us our best chance at having a competitive series, because you're going to play a team that's not as good.
Well, I think there's, you know, I think there's healthy expectations and unhealthy expectations. And I think when you expect but don't expect to earn,
That's a good point.
You know, that's when you can run into trouble. And I think, frankly, like some of those LeBron, you know, second era teams probably played into that a little bit, where they were like, we're better than everyone else. It's fine. We'll show up. We'll play 1.5 really good quarters a night. And most of the time that's going to be enough. I don't get the vibe that this team is coming with that that set of expectations. What about you, fellas, over at Wine and Gold?
I like the approach of just doing your job and expectations will take care of themselves. I think we keep going back to JB because I said to him yesterday, ever since he came and took over after that All-Star break, the Cavs change. We now have an identity. We now have a personality. We now have an image. And now when you talk about Cavaliers basketball, you kind of know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? It's a system. And the test is, and the fact that we can now bring in a player of the caliber of Donovan Mitchell, and the system will stay the system because everybody does their job. Everybody does what they are supposed to do. And that's why Jerry was so successful last season. And JB took it out. He said it was his fault because didn't have Jerry in a position 2 years ago of what was his role, what was he was supposed to do. And then, you know, the other thing is health, right? Out of everybody that is ready and able to play on opening night, only Ricky Rubio is not active in practices right now. And we all know why. So, you know, hopefully that kind of stands to the season, and we have a little luck on that matter. But to me, again, yes, playoff is something that everybody aspires to. But it just, if we have the same thing that we had, the growth, that a little more growth from Darius Garland, you know, the Ricky Rubio coming back from the one he almost had a triple double the night he got injured, you know, the Kevin Love, who was the guy that was available for every game he could have played except for the COVID games, and all those little things will get us to that expectation that everybody talks about.
And I agree. And Justin brought up a good point in that, you know, the season's not decided on paper. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, everything's on paper. You know, you don't know what's going to happen right now. Like, I look back at the Pacers a couple of years ago, and that they looked like they were on the rise. They had Sabonis. It looked like, boy, they got a nice young nucleus and Brogdon, and it looked like it was going to work out. Then it fell apart and totally fell apart. And I'm saying the point is that the NBA is fickle and that some of the teams that you're slotting in, oh, they're going to be the number two seed. They're going to be the number three seed. We'll be the, you don't know what's going to happen to them during the year. A team like Brooklyn or, you know, even Philly, you don't know what's going to happen. Injuries, luck, you know, all these things.
Think about Boston now with a, with a head coach.
Boston, right. Again, Boston now all of a sudden, they're without their head coach right before training camp. So,
and not only things, that, Robert Williams, 8 to 12 weeks until he returns to basketball activities to begin.
The Bulls don't have Lonzo now.
Right. You know? And these are one things. And throughout the course of the year, by the time, if we met 1 week from now, the landscape might have changed. We might have said, wow, this guy got hurt in training camp. And all of a sudden they dropped down to here. So
and
your point,
entire teams, you know, high Cavs last year can get wiped out. You know, it's not necessarily one. It's not necessarily one injury at a time. You know, sometimes you just get the bad dice roll and it just get absolutely wiped out. And, you know, I think the Cavs are in a really good position to, you know, capitalize. And like, as long as, to Rafa's point, they're doing their jobs every night and beating the teams they're supposed to beat and coming with that kind of attitude of, you know, we're going to be a pain in the ass to play every night. I think that they're really well positioned. But with all that said, I think from the beginning of last year, we all kind of agreed that Evan, you know, the second we saw Mobley, we were like, oh, this is the guy that could be, you know, the ceiling raiser. Yes. And it sure sounds like he's been working on his game. Let's check out what Jared Allen had to say about his game to Marla Ridenour.
What have you seen that he's ready to make the leap?
Every time I have to guard him, it seems like he scores. You know, he always scores on me. His offensive game is improving still from what it was last year. I mean, we obviously know he's a all-NBA defense caliber type of defensive player, but on the offensive wise, he still amazes us with moves every time.
Yeah, so you look at someone like Mobley, who, and like, that's meaningful to me. That's like, that sounds like a throwaway joke quote.
Well,
but
that,
like,
Carter, it's really meaningful. I mean, people are worried about the Cavs defense with Mitchell, but apparently Jared Allen's taking a big step back on defense. Like, he's just getting roasted out by Evan Mobley.
But, you know, but Allen is a truly elite defender. And I think there is a notable thing of Kim saying, like, it's not like he's saying that Mobley has always scored on him when he has to guard him.
Yeah.
He's saying that there's been meaningful growth. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I have kind of been on the page of like, Mobley's leap probably is another year away, like this, the Uber leap, you know? And I guess my question is, what if he makes the big leap next season? You know, this upcoming year, what if he becomes a guy who can reliably get you 20 every night on the offensive side of the ball? And how does that meaningfully affect this team's contention window?
I think that would just give JB more to work with, right? Like, I think what we got robbed of last season as it progressed was, with more and more guys going down, there were fewer and fewer styles that the Cavs could play. And if Evan Mobley is at a point where his game has advanced to, maybe the three-pointer isn't there yet, but he's worked on his perimeter game, he's worked on his face-up game, he's a more of a threat to score, all of a sudden that's three guys you need to account for, and I think that makes everybody's life easier. So to me, that it'd be great to see that. I honestly wouldn't even mind seeing an improvement in the margins like Jared Allen had last season. Like, Jared didn't add anything substantial to his game coming into last year, but he got a bit stronger. His game was a little more refined. You could see he was passing well out of doubles. His footwork had improved, and just these kind of little things that can make a big difference. I mean, even if Evan is shooting free throws better than he did last season, with how many games came down to the wire, those points can add up. So I would really love to see him make a leap, but the thing with this team and how young they are is there's not like a singular leap that's going to come at some point here. They're probably going to continue improving for the next few years here.
And the style of ball that the Cavs are playing is the one that is not just one person that's going to be the leading scorer every night. It could change. But, you know, when you look at the Cavs last year, everybody talked about, you know, the Cavs need to improve on the two. You know, if they get a better two, they're gonna be a better. Well, I think they did a good job at that, at improving at the two, and that might open up some room for Evan Mobley, a little more space. You know, so we don't know. I don't know which one of the Evan Mobleys is gonna be the one making the improvement. We asked him yesterday, one and goal, whether he's, you know, the smooth criminal Evan Mobley, which the moves inside the paint, or the evil Mobley just banging it down the rim. So he likes the smooth criminal better. So expect a little more ball handling from Evan Mobley, which is something we know he had to improve from last season. But I don't see why that jump cannot come this year.
Fellas, I got to ask real quick, though. The arms look bigger. The chest looks a little fuller. Has he filled
and
out?
He was one of the most talkative players in practice today. Just to give you
a different man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hey, I think with Evan, I've also added 15 pounds coming into camp, so that's that's big.
And your guns look kind of huge too. So
thank you.
I was going to say with Evan, I think one thing that he has the advantage of when you're number three pick and you're as good as he is, a lot of times you're the focal point for the opponent. They're geared up to stop you, and you know you're the number three pick. For Evan, he's kind of like almost the fourth option on offense right now. So he's got all kinds of like freedom, to Rafa's point about adding Donovan Mitchell. That gives him more space to work and less attention that they can pay to him. And also, as far as his development, I think he could make that big leap. Two things. One, just like you talked about, his chest and his arms, just physically, naturally, as a person, as a young man, he's going to get bigger.
Don't forget, he's still growing.
That's what I mean. He's still naturally growing. So, I mean, he's going to fill out. He's 20, on the, he's 21.
On the official Height Watch pod, no less. You can't throw around such things so lightly.
Right. So, I mean, and also the thing is, 1 year through the league, now he's gone through. Now he doesn't have to worry about, you know, whatever every city's like, what every opponent is like. He now has a nice library in his head of what everybody's like, what every big man looks like. Yeah, and now he doesn't have to worry about how does travel work? How does this work? He knows how it works. And on top of that, he's got his older brother now to maybe take a little more pressure off him, make him feel a little more comfortable. Yeah, I don't see why he can't take a huge leap this year.
Honestly, he seems so much more comfortable too. Like he seemed a little more talkative. It seems like he opens up when his brother's around too. Like you can tell they have a lot of fun and even just him kind of joking around, like the grabbing the mic and asking JB about the beep test, which brought me right back to high school. I hated that thing so much. But it's just funny having
your older brother as your rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, how can that not inspire you?
I genuinely think my brother would not play in the league if he had to be my rookie.
You would torture him?
Yeah. He's been torturing me my whole life. He's not going to accept the inverse happening. Yeah.
My underrated favorite moment from Media Day was when he was asked what his reaction was or how he found out about the Donovan Mitchell trade. And when he said, someone yelled across the gym as I was working out that we got Donovan Mitchell. And I was like, oh, shoot. And then start texting people. Just so accidentally hilarious. That was one of my favorite moments for sure.
A sweet, gentle soul.
But not on the basketball court.
Like
fun.
Yeah. Well, I do feel like his leap, you know, if once he does take that, I feel like he really is, you know, pre-Donovan trade and post-Donovan trade. I've still felt like his ascension to becoming a top 10 player is like the most obvious route for this team to like go from really, really good team to legitimate title contender. You know, there aren't any title contenders that don't have top 10 players. It's just, you know, like that's kind of a basic prerequisite. No matter, I mean, there have been, you know, examples, you know, the 04 Pistons and things like that where teams have done it by committee. But for the most part, you need to have a true blue chipper. And that true blue chipper doesn't need to lead your team in points, but they gotta be, you know, a top 10, top 15 talent. And I do think that is like, if he gets there earlier than we expect, that to me, that just means the championship window is open, you know, longer than we expect it to.
Yep.
But fellas, we've been talking about all this positivity and good vibes. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't, you know, challenge ourselves, challenge our audience with a bit of a controversial topic in the other way. Donovan Mitchell on Media Day joined NBA TV and he was asked about his defense.
defense, but in what ways do you see yourself taking a jump defensively?
I think honestly, it's a lot of it's just focus. You know, I think when you have a guy like, you know, Darius on the other side, on one side you have Ev and you have Jared, but just being able, you have coach who's able to kind of lock in on little details, but just focus. You know, a lot of times it's just, it's simple things. You know, I have the ability, I have the athleticism, I know I can do it. I've done it. You know, so I just got to go out there and do just that. I think, you know, when you have guys like Darius, Ev, and Karis, K-Love, guys on the offensively can, you know, go and get a bucket, you know, takes the load off a little bit and allows you to kind of sit back and, you know, catch your breath and be ready to play on both sides of the ball. And I think that's what I'm excited for.
So I think what's interesting about that answer there from Donovan is a little bit of defiance of like, hey, I know I can do this. Like, I'm not someone who is, you know, physically deficient and has to take L's on the defensive end, but to the point that a lot of people have made, the defensive track record the last couple of years for Donovan has not been, you know, great. And, you know, we know all the kind of mitigating circumstances was the sole offensive engine for Utah. He's going to have a lot more help on the ball here. But fellas, I just want to ask honestly, truly honestly, what do we expect out of Donovan Mitchell on the defensive end of the ball this year? I get a little,
one at a time, and it's
crickets.
I have to be honest with you. I don't know much about basketball, but I'm a fan, and I never thought of Donovan Mitchell being that much of a liability defensively because of the system that he played in. I mean, Utah was more concerned about putting the ball on the other end and getting the ball back. Didn't matter if they score, so they could put up a three on the other end. And I think that being said, and also with the fact that our defensive scheme, the plan that JB has is for a team defense, not just one guy stopping and being like one stopper defense or letting everybody go by and then let Jared Allen and Evan Mobley take care of it. Yes, that's the backup plan, right? It's in case they get through the three in up front. But I think that he has the athletic skills and the want to do it to succeed defensively with the Cavs the way JB wants to play defense with his team.
I don't know what Utah was ranked defensively over the course of Donovan Mitchell's stay in Utah, but I'll bet you it was pretty high.
Best record in the NBA.
And Quinn Snyder was known as like a real defensive mind. And I know that they were known as a defensive team. And last year, the Cavs were top five in the league. And I'm just going to say this. The reason Utah was ranked high defensively was because of Rudy Gobert. And the reason we're ranked high defensively is because Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. I'm not worried about Donovan Mitchell's defense. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I don't know. Again, I'm with Rafa in that. I'm not sure I know enough about basketball to judge Donovan Mitchell's defense. But I know that it'll be good enough. And when push comes to shove, I think we play team defense in that we're filtering the backcourt is filtering guys into our big men. Mm-hmm. That's the plan. It's team defense. And as far as guarding guys on the perimeter, man, there's a handful, literally a handful of guys in the NBA that are shut down perimeter guys, in my opinion. Come playoff time, when you get down to the last two or three possessions, then it matters. And I think at that point,
everybody brings it.
Yeah. But it's a long season, and Donovan Mitchell I think he's adequate defensively, and that's, I think, good enough.
Yeah, I think adequate is the goal to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you have to be a individual shutdown defender. I think you have, and we saw even Karis have to transition when he came to the team midseason, where it's like, and he talked about it. I think even after that game, he pretty much won for the team in Indiana, where he's like, damn, I made a lot of defensive mistakes, and like clearly that doesn't fly here. You know, like I think a lot of us in the basketball community kind of wondered if Utah became, you know, too dependent on the Rudy Gobert, defensive core. They pretty much just said, you know, hey, we're going to have nothing but offensive players on this team and Rudy Gobert.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I'm not saying Donovan Mitchell is not interested in playing defense. I'm sure he is. And in fact, today at media availability at the courts, he said, "Hey, we were top five defensively last year. I don't want to all of a sudden be 6, 7, 8 because I'm here." You know what I mean? I mean, he's going to take pride on the defensive end. I'm sure of that. But again, I just think during the season, scorers like him, defense is just a.
Just one more thing that should take care of the Warrior, whether or not La Araña Mitchell.
La Araña.
It's going to be okay on defense. I think you have to put your trust on JB Bickerstaff and his staff. Mm-hmm. And when he says we're asking people to be the best versions of themselves, it's because they put them in situations and in positions where they can be the best that they can be. And I don't think the Cavs are going to be playing any type of defensive scheme that does not fit the five on the floor, and which for most of the time is going to be Donovan Mitchell. So my trust is with the staff that they'll figure out a way to make him an asset defensively with whoever four he's playing with.
What stands out to me is the fact that he points out we have so much offensive talent around, because when we had Tony Jones on from The Athletic, he was talking about how during the regular season, Donovan Mitchell, you know, he's about an average defender. He's not necessarily a liability. Mm-hmm. Earlier in his career, he was a legitimate plus defender. He was a great defender in college, and that was kind of his reputation. But then when you get to the playoffs and you don't have a lot of guys to take pressure off you, and you are kind of that leading scorer, it's a different dynamic. You're going to get tired. I mean, if you look at the NBA history, all-time points per game in the playoffs, Donovan Mitchell is 7th. Only Michael Jordan, Luka, Allen Iverson, Kevin Durant, Jerry West, and LeBron James are ahead of him in playoff points per game. And when Donovan talks about, you know, we have this offensive talent around, like, I want to commit to defense, it's, again, it sounds like it's him buying into being a part of this. I'm not going to be the son where everyone on the roster revolves around me. Like, I'm coming to be a part of this. And it reminds me also of, like, when you look at the responsibilities of the guard position, it's different. It's not half the game defensively. Like, you want to be in position within the defensive scheme, but you're not that last line of defense.
Don't screw up. That's your whole job.
And remember, everything that JB tells these guys is our offense is fed by our defense. We are born with our defensive scheme. We don't play defense, we're not going anywhere. So that's one thing that you have to consider when you worry about whether or not Donovan Mitchell is going to be a liability. I don't think he will, because he'll be put in a situation for him to succeed.
Yeah, and I think we saw even last year with Toronto getting Gary Trent Jr., which I guess they traded for him the previous season, but he wasn't someone that was thought of as a good defender, but he was someone with active hands. And Donovan Mitchell is always up there with steals. He's always up there with activity. It's about how consistently that effort comes in. And if you got a back line where it's Mobley and Allen and it's Okoro or Dean Wade, like two other really good front court defensive players, you just have to kind of be in position, not give up the easy drive to the lane. And those active hands are going to be really helpful. That's going to help them get out in transition, play with pace, and turn their defense into offense, like you said, Rafa. So I feel pretty good about his ability to fit within the existing system. The same way Lowry did. Like, Lowry wasn't a great defender. He's not the most mobile guy, but he bought into the system, and the defense was effective as a result of that.
It's worth noting, you mentioned he's always been up in the steals. A great stat from Chris Manning over at Locked On Cavs. Mitchell would have led the Cavs in steals last year. I think it's a really interesting stat, especially given that the team's, you know, best defender, in my opinion, on the perimeter, and Isaac Okoro, isn't really an event defender. You know, he's not a high steal, high block guy. He's a, you know, lockdown defender. A true lockdown fundamental defender that, you know, isn't going to force a ton of turnovers, but also forces really, really tough shots. I think it's kind of nice to have, you know, Ricky Rubio was an event defender last year. He was just under Donovan Mitchell in steals per game and a lot less minutes. So, you know, I think that, you know, seeing having someone who's active, using their wingspan to jump and athleticism to jump those passing lanes and generate some easy points in transition, I do think there's going to be some things, not just where he's just surviving on the defensive end, but actually actively helping. Sure, there's going to be trade-offs every now and again, but I do think like his ability to, you know, get pick sixes basically in the basketball, on the basketball version of them is going to be a big deal. I do want to move from the two to the three. Dean Wade, freshly minted and extended Dean Wade, was asked about kind of the battle for the small forward spot in video captured by dear friend of the pod, Spencer Davies. Let's take a listen.
It's no secret with Lowry gone, there's an open spot at the small forward in the starting lineup. How do you approach that?
You know, I just go in the same I've always gone in, just, you know, going to training camp and just be aggressive as you can and just try to make things happen. You know, you never know with who's going to be hot, who's not going to be hot, and especially like in the NBA matchups is a big thing. So, you know, I know there's games that I'll play a lot. There's some games I won't play that much. So I understand that. And, you know, every day you just got to attack it and be aggressive.
So before we talk about the three, let's shout out our boy Dean Wade. A 3-year extension, Cavs just announced, I think it was today. Time is a flat circle. I don't remember when things happen.
It was
today. What a great story. And I think a testament to development for this team. Joe, talk a little bit about, like, you know, what finding a guy like Dean Wade means for this front office and coaching staff.
You brought up, that's it, development, you said. And also the willingness to gamble on 4-year guys that weren't, you know, highly thought of in the draft. Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade. So I just think, you know, they made the investment in him and he's just paid off. He's worked hard and, you know, I mean, he's in the mix for the starting three, I think, going into the season. I think he's absolutely in the mix.
I think he gets it. And I think that's one of the most important things about Dean Wade. He gets the fact that he got an opportunity from the Cavs. You want to throw in COVID, you want to throw in everything you want to do, but he was there and took advantage of his opportunity when he wasn't even drafted, right? And then he comes in, he plays and starts 9 games in a row, and then he doesn't see the court again for another 2 weeks, and then he comes back again, and it's the same Dean Wade. And I think that's something that rubs off on everybody on this squad. Him and Lamar have been the poster children of just hard work and wait for your turn. And it's going, when he comes, you better make sure you shoot your shot, right? And there is no better guy to root for than Dean Wade. And then you throw in Lamar Stevens in there. They're, you know, two guys that everybody admires in that locker room and two guys that everybody's rooting for. And with his shooting percentages, I think Dean Wade has a really good chance of being that three. And don't forget, speaking of defensive schemes and speaking of skills, he is really good defensively, a lot bigger than what he looks like. He plays a lot bigger than what he is.
Yeah, he's 6'9", and he moves well. Like, to me,
really Dean athletic Wade, for 6'10".
Like Dean Wade always
sneaky.
He's definitely sneaky athletic. Dean Wade definitely jumps out to me as just kind of like the picture reliability with this team. And it kind of reminds me of our very reliable sponsor, Zoom. Support for this podcast. And the following message comes from Zoom.
Segway.
That was smooth, man.
500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. Rafa, I do like your prediction that Dean's going to be the small forward, starting small forward. I honestly think it's going to come down to he or Isaac. Like, they make the most sense at the small forward position, especially alongside Garland and Mitchell, because those guys, they're going to have the ball in their hands. And having someone, you know, that is bringing it on the defensive end of the floor, that can hit those threes, that isn't going to need the ball in their hands to play well, that makes the most sense to me. Because Karis is, I think most people would argue that Karis is a better player, at least to this point, than what we've seen from Isaac and Dean. Mm-hmm. But he's at his best with the ball in his hands, and you probably want that juice coming in off the bench. I know he talked about his willingness to play whatever role the team wants, and I just think when you're trying to get the best 48 minutes and have the most combinations that work, staggering Karras and having him come in off the bench makes the most sense. So to me, it's whoever earns it out of Isaac and Dean. But I guess Jetty, Dylan, LeVert, all those guys are going, Lamar, they're all going to get a chance. And I know JB spoke about that today as well, that it's going to be an open competition. And I think that's healthy for a team like this.
And well, going back to being ready. Go ahead, Carter.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say what I thought was interesting about Dean's answer was, you know, whether or not he starts, he kind of seems to indicate that there's still going to be nights where he just doesn't play that much because the matchups, you know, favor Isaac, favor Jetty, favor Dylan. And like, I do think, like I talked about this on our last podcast, I do think JB is somewhat of a utilitarian coach. Like, he's just going to, I think he's not always so worried about the long game. With his rotations, I think he's like, I'm just going to play the guys who are playing the best, or are the best fit for the situation we're in. So I think that even if, you know, Isaac wins the starting job or Dean wins the starting job, I would venture to guess, much like the play-in, that depending on what kind of matchups they have in the postseason, that spot in the lineup might be very fungible, might be something that is very easily swapped out. If you're playing Boston in a playoff series and you need a bigger body to throw on someone like Jason Tatum, maybe Wade gets the nod. If you're playing Atlanta and you want to throw Isaac Okoro on Trae Young, maybe Isaac gets the nod. I think it is going to be very, very flexible, and maybe not every day in the regular season, but like, I wouldn't consider that position locked away the second it's won.
You know, Justin was mentioned in Zoom. So can I do a little plug for a campaign that One and Goal is doing?
The only reason I'm
predicting Dean Wade to get this the number three spot is because we got a campaign going here that we want every fan in the arena to howl every time Dean Wolf is introduced or every time he hits a bucket at the field house, you know. And he approved it. He's all for it. Dean Wade is all for it. Because somebody mentioned a nickname that somebody called him and he wasn't too happy with it. And
The Lucky Charm.
The Lucky Charm.
That's awful.
Although Jared Allen has had a great nickname suggestion for Robin Lopez, who they're calling Rolo.
Yeah.
But it's not that. It's Captain Hook.
Captain Hook, yeah.
Isn't that kind of a cool nickname for a big man? Because he's got a good hook.
For all the Cavs fans listening and watching, if you're at the field house and every time Dean Wolf hits a bucket, you gotta howl. So we gotta get going.
We gotta get game ops doing that through Hume on the Tron. It's gotta be a bit of a thing.
Justin and I hope to be at the home opener, and we will be howling with the best of them. I do think I think no matter who's starting at the three, I do think that it's gonna be Wade and Okoro getting the bulk of the minutes there. Do you all agree with that, or do you think there's a chance? I know Wendler is getting really, really good press coming out of camp, and obviously Jetty has a long history of contributing to this team. Do you think it's Isaac and Wade for the most part in the rotation healthy right now?
Especially from the jumbo lineup from last season worked so well, and when Dean Wade took over that position with all the injuries and JB like that. And again, you heard him here. He knows he's not going to play some nights. He knows he's going to start other nights. It's okay with him. He just wants to be part of this team and do whatever he can do to succeed. So I think he's definitely going to get some minutes because he's earned them.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be three by committee. You know, I think it's going to be, you know, injuries are going to happen. Guys are going to go out. Guys are going to get nicked up. Throughout the course of the year, I think you're just going to see, you know, when you look at the three, you know, at the end of the year, I think you're going to see five different names, six different names of guys that just, you know, that wind up starting. And I think it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's nice to have to get the start, but it's going to be who's playing well that night.
Who finishes is way more important. And I think the advantage, like when Carter's talking about making adjustments for individual matchups, whether it's in the starting lineup or who gets the most minutes within that game, because ultimately all minutes are basically equal here, right? Like it doesn't really matter that much who gets announced at the start of the game. But having that experience playing with those different lineups better prepares you for the playoffs where you might have to make those adjustments. Because I think you see some teams, they approach the regular season. We do what we do. These are our lineups. These are our rotations. And then when you have to make those adjustments in the playoffs, the chemistry isn't there because they haven't played with this guy as much in the regular season. And doing those types of adjustments, getting experience with different lineup combinations, I think that all pays dividends once you get to the postseason.
Yeah, one nice thing about Wade, by the way, is that he isn't just a three. You know, I think he's going to get plenty of minutes at the four this year.
You might look at five.
you might look at the depth chart and see him as like kind of that third power forward behind, you know, Evan and Kevin. But Evan's going to play, you know, 18 minutes a game at the five oftentimes. And Kevin certainly isn't going to play 30 plus at this point in his career. I think Dean's going to have plenty of opportunities kind of no matter where he's playing. I do want to jump over to Kevin Love, who during his media appearance talked about Darius Garland's development as a leader on this team.
More than anything, he's really, as far as, I talked about Kobe wanting us to keep him in touch and make sure that we're reaching out to each other, staying together, communicating. Darius has been amazing with that. I mean, it's funny for me saying these guys are young, but to be that age and to really take the reins and to be a leader, he's really stepped up in that way. And I think we saw flashes of that last year, but, he knows it's his team. It's his team to run. And then you add Donovan.
So I found that to be a really interesting quote from Kevin. Normally young teams like this, there's a lot of talk about leadership by committee and everyone kind of bringing their lunch pail. And it does feel like last season, Darius developed some kind of cult of personality, with that roster full of a lot of guys that are, pretty soft-spoken. Jarrett's a pretty soft-spoken guy. Evan's a pretty soft-spoken guy. Even Kevin was never like the super exuberant vocal leader. He's always been kind of a lead by example kind of guy. Do we feel like Darius is, kind of the voice of this team and ultimately the leader of this team going into next year? Is he going to be kind of the touch point that we look at in terms of their success or failure?
Well, I think he's in the position. He's the maestro, no, of the orchestra. He's the one in charge of leading the charge. So I think he's in that position. But I think he's also grown a lot, not just on the court, but off the court. He's been forced to mature a lot faster because he was given the team basically after the injury to Colin Sexton. He was what are you gonna do now to take us forward? No, with the jumbo lineup that we had come up with. So I think he's definitely ready for it. He's very vocal in practice now, and he's no longer that kid that came to Cleveland a few years back. it's a different man, And he has had the luck, you mentioned it, Carter, that the soft-spoken teammates, he has had the luck to have leaders and veteran players like Ricky and Kevin who were willingly helping him just get to that point where he was going to be the leader, just helping him out and not kind of like taking the, I don't want to say take the spotlight away from him, but just kind of helping him towards that position that he has, I think, accepted and done pretty well so far.
I think you brought up both things that I was going to say. One thing was when Colin Sexton went down. Before that, I think Darius didn't know what he should do because they were both kind of point guards and they were sex land and he didn't know, well, am I the guy? Is it sex land? Right. There's so many like question marks about his role. I think when Colin went down, he obviously assumed that role. Then he won that game with the free throw in Toronto. I think it was a big moment for him. Yeah. And then overall, I think having Ricky Rubio just having that veteran influence is huge. I mean, we talked about it kind of last year towards the end, Rondo, who whatever. But I mean, to have Rondo and Ricky Rubio both kind of working with you as a point guard in your third year in the league, those are two pretty good veterans that can show you some pretty good tricks to how to do it.
And the most important thing is helping him without competing for minutes or competing for his position. So he was I don't want to say a comfortable situation, but a very good situation, learning from two of the best point guards that have touched the basketball and actually just really, really being showing that he's a quick learner, man, and obviously got the skill set.
Well, yeah, Rubio was – Rubio was asked in the presser about coming back to continue to mentor Darius and during his media availability, you almost hear Rubio kind of say like, I'm pretty sure my mission's, you know, mission accomplished here. It's like, like he's an all-star now, you know, he almost had that vibe of like, you know, the sensei who had already completed his students' training, and does feel like Darius, even to, you know, everyone going to Nashville, to go run with him, that all feels really meaningful, you know, in kind of cementing his place as the leader of the team. Sorry to cut you off, Justin.
Yeah. And that's why, like Kobe talked about it when in the Road Back there, which everyone should go check out the latest episode of the Road Back. But there was the part where they went out to dinner and signed Darius to the contract. And the first player in Cavs franchise history to get that designated rookie max. And what he said was, you have the keys to the city. Like, this is the keys to your team. Like, and it's the nature of the position that, like, as a point guard, you are the one quarterbacking everything. You are the guy making sure that everyone's getting into your sets. You're the guy that when Donovan Mitchell gets traded, you are automatically calling him up and figuring out workouts and stuff like that. And I think, like, it's interesting for us to sit here and have, like, debates over who's the leader, or I'm sure in 2-3 years we're going to be having debates about who's the best player on the team, and we'll look at all these metrics and stuff like that. But ultimately, that stuff doesn't really matter when everyone's working towards the same goal and you're all part of a collective, because, like, Evan might be the best player on the team, but, you know, Darius is a little more outspoken. He's got a little bit more of that kind of a personality. And, like, even when you look back at those Dynasty Spurs teams, like, Tim was the best player on that team, but Ginobili a lot of the times was kind of like the heart and soul. He was the leader. He was an orchestrator of the offense. Tony Parker would play that role. And I think what the Cavs have set up is something where everybody's skills complement each other really well. Their personalities complement each other really well. And it does feel like Darius still kind of has those keys where, even if he's not the best player on a given night, or maybe at some point in their development, Evan or Donovan or all these guys, like, maybe he's third in some nights, but he's still going to be that leader. And to me, he's still kind of the guy coming into this season. Like, I think he's the heart and soul of the team.
Yep. I agree with you. And I think it's that, him the leader, Rubio and Kevin being the glue. You know, Rubio is the veteran, and I think Kevin has taken the Channing role of being the guy who keeps everybody loose.
Yeah.
But he's also comes in. I don't think he has the keys to Fry Island yet, but, you know, but he can get on that, in that mode. But it is incredible to see what's going on here, you know, in the day in and day out. And you know, going back to Garland, where did they practice in before training camp? They went to Nashville. Mm-hmm. And when they went to, he's the one that got them together and say, you know, we're going to practice. So
I love you mentioning Kevin kind of transitioning that role, because that just makes me happy from, like, a fan perspective. Because, you know, you saw the years when he's all the pressure of coming here with the LeBron team and trying to make those adjustments. And like, the thing I've always loved about Kevin Love is he's been so honest and open, right? Like, where he's like, I didn't handle this situation well, and I did this to overcome it. And now that he's at a point where, you know what, not everything's on my back, but I'm happy to be here to contribute. I'm happy to be in my role. I'm happy to be around these guys. I'm having some fun. I'm keeping it light. I've got Ricky to mentor Garland and Mitchell, and even Howell. Like, I think Neto is underrated from a leadership standpoint, because, like, you hear every single team he's with, he gets credited as being one of those guys that's really great for the young players to be around. And Robin Lopez is a great leader for Jared and Evan. Like, I think Kobe did a really good job of having veterans that can help on the court, others that maybe they're almost like functionally a coach at times, but there's a good mix of age, experience, and again, it all just seems to mesh really well. And it's part of why I'm so optimistic going into the season, other than the fact I'm just a homer and I'm always optimistic.
Yeah, you're always optimistic. That's there's no change there. I do think there is.
It's meaningful, Carter. Trust me, it's really meaningful.
It is a good point, though, that about, you know, like, leadership doesn't just happen, right? You know, leadership is, you know, I feel like it is, you have to create an environment where someone like Darius can grow into one. And I think Kobe's done a really good job of that and has continued to do that with the pieces he's added. You know, like there was a lot of folks on draft night, you know, screaming to add, you know, play now, second round picks. And, you know, I think with a core of, you know, with a core of 22-year-olds, you know, sometimes the best people to flank them with are these people like Ricky, like Howell, like Robin Lopez, like Kevin. You know, you've got all the youth in your, you know, it's a little inverse. You know, normally we're used to seeing the older core and you flank them with the young guns that are up and coming. You kind of have to do the inverse because of how talented this team's best players are. But like they are creating an environment that, you know, generates leaders. And I think it's really, really exciting.
And all these veterans, there's one thing they share in common. They're very bright, not only basketball wise, but just to do the right thing when it comes to, we're going to hit those moments during the season. But like you see Robin Lopez fighting with the mascot and you think he's, a, you know, he's a clown and he's a bright dude. We were talking to him yesterday and it's really incredible to see, especially in practice, just how quickly he gets it and how good he is in terms of just helping the other guys around. So the job that Kobe has done that you mentioned, Kurt, is amazing because he's got a good mix of guys.
Am I the only guy who didn't know how to pronounce Raul Neto's name?
Brazilian Portuguese, man. There's a lot of linguistic rules that'll confuse you.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of clueless on that one.
Yeah, and by the way, we're gonna start a tour of Brazilian restaurants around the league with Raul, because we have a couple of restaurants. I have a couple of restaurants I have to take him to in New York City, and he has a couple of, you know, around the league. So
I'll bet he'll take good care of us. I think I learned, Joe, in fairness, I think I learned from NBA 2K. So, you know, it's not like...
hey, at least you learned. Like Ricky Rubio had to correct me yesterday. He did. I called him Raul Neto, and he's like, oh, and he kind of says... And him and Rafa laughed at me.
With an H, Raul.
Ricky and Rafa laughed at me.
Start referring to me like I'm Portuguese.
Rafa.
Hafa.
Hafa.
Is that it? That's how they would say it.
Really?
Well, we certainly know the value of having bright veterans around. That's why we bring you guys on. They're the brightest veterans that we know. Really appreciate your time, guys. To all our listeners, if you're not already checking out Wine and Gold Radio, absolutely.
What are you doing?
They're back. They're back for the regular season. It's back in their feeds. Already got some great episodes up last couple of weeks I've been checking out. So thank you guys so much for your time.
Robin? Are you voting for me to sing the national anthem when the Raptors come to Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse?
Of course. Not even a question.
Do you want to get a taste of it just so you can give your vote?
Yes, please.
Take us home, Rafa.
First row.
Which one? Left. Right here?
Yeah.
God keep our land. Glorious and free.
Oh, wow.
God keep our land.
God.
It's a beautiful voice, Rafa.
Okay, there you go.
Don't let anyone ever take it from you.
That might be the best note we have ever wrapped this podcast up on. So thank you.
Stop encouraging him.
No, I'm absolutely going to keep encouraging this. It's tremendous content, and that's what I care about at the end of the day here. So thank you both so much. Really appreciate your time. Again, listeners, check out Wine and Gold Radio. Big thanks to everyone tuning in live on YouTube. If you want to support us, like, subscribe, click notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cats!
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.